Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Suing to Stop Global Warming Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 19th, 2011, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in American Electric Power Company versus Connecticut. The question in this case is whether federal law permits states and private entities to sue utilities for allegedly contributing to global warming. To discuss the case, we have Megan L. Brown, who is a partner at Wiley Rhine, LLP. Ms. Brown is on an amicus brief in support of the petitioners. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Brown.
I'm Megan Brown, a partner at Wiley Rhine. I filed a brief in this case on behalf of the Cato Institute. On April 19th, the Supreme Court heard argument in American Electric Power Company versus Connecticut, or AEP, an important case from the Second Circuit that raises major questions about the role of federal courts in addressing global climate change. This case pits certain states against a handful of energy companies alleged to contribute to global warming. It's one of several in the federal courts that seek to use public nuisance doctrine in creative ways to slow global warming in the absence of what activists and the plaintiffs consider appropriate regulatory action by Congress or EPA. Several things make this case noteworthy. First, it's doctrinally rich with several related justiciability questions before the court: standing, political question, and federal common law. Second, the case is being litigated against a dynamic political backdrop. Congress and the EPA have been and presently are hotly debating what, if anything, to do about global warming, including limits on the agency's authority. Indeed, activists and commentators have long agitated for heroic litigation to address global warming in the face of political inaction. Third, the Obama administration had to take a position because the Tennessee Valley Authority is a named defendant. Though the United States agrees with much of the energy company's arguments that this case is unsuitable for judicial resolution, on some key issues, the Solicitor General disagrees with the defendants or does not take a position. Finally, because there presently are no restrictions on the carbon dioxide emissions at issue here, this litigation threatens standardless liability for businesses and industries. Not surprisingly, the court received numerous amicus briefs from many parties, including the American Farm Bureau Federation, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, and 23 states who disagree with those that filed suit, along with a handful of other states that support the suit. In this podcast, I'll give some background to this and other global warming nuisance cases, summarize the doctrinal issues, and recap what happened at the court. AEP is one of several nuisance suits percolating in federal courts over the past decade. Plaintiffs in Mississippi, California, and New York have sought to craft creative theories to impose emissions caps or damages on alleged contributors to global warming. In Comer versus Murphy Oil, Mississippi residents sued dozens of energy companies seeking damage from Hurricane Katrina, which allegedly was intensified by global warming. The case was dismissed by the trial court, but a panel of the Fifth Circuit reversed. After procedurally complicated on-bank proceedings, the panel opinion was vacated, leaving the dismissal intact. The Supreme Court declined to get involved in that case. Another case is pending in the Ninth Circuit. In Native Village of Kivalina versus ExxonMobil, a village filed suit seeking hundreds of millions of dollars from dozens of oil, energy, and utility companies due to coastal erosion allegedly caused by global warming. There, too, the district court dismissed, and the appeal is pending. AEP presents the same nuisance theories, but the remedy demonstrates the unprecedented nature of the case. Plaintiffs seek to assign these companies their alleged share of responsibility for global warming and obtain an injunction, capping their carbon dioxide emissions and imposing specific reductions over a period of at least 10 years. The Southern District of New York dismissed under the political question doctrine, but the Second Circuit reversed. Not surprisingly, the novel theory and remarkable relief sought raised doctrinal questions at the heart of the separation of powers. While no clear consensus emerged at argument on any particular doctrinal basis, justices across the bench were skeptical of this case. The district court concluded that AEP presented a non-justiciable political question under a case called Baker versus Carr because, among other things, its resolution would require identification and balancing of economic, environmental, foreign policy, and national security interests without adequate guidance from the political branches. A two-judge panel reversed, viewing the case as an ordinary tort suit within the competence of federal courts. Justice Sotomayor, while still on the Second Circuit, was on the panel, but was elevated to the Supreme Court before the decision issued. The panel also rejected defendants' other arguments that plaintiffs lack standing, that the federal common law of nuisance provided no cause of action, and that the claims were displaced by congressional or EPA action. The panel relied heavily on the Supreme Court's 2000 decision in Massachusetts versus EPA, which it interpreted as allowing alleged future global warming injuries, including damages from rising sea levels, to be actionable. The cert petition raised all three issues: standing, federal common law, and the political question doctrine. On standing, the energy companies highlight the traceability and addressability prongs and argue they're not met. They argue that it's not enough for Article 3 to assert that a defendant, quote, contributes to global warming. The Obama administration's position on Article 3 standing disagrees. Although the administration says that the question is not free from doubt, they find the state's allegations are enough to survive under Massachusetts versus EPA. Instead, the SG urges the court to rely on the prudential standing doctrine. Two justices, Kagan and Ginsburg, seemed inclined to agree with the United States on the Article 3 question. Justices Kennedy and Scalia seemed eager to go beyond the standing doctrine and reach the merits. The energy companies also argue that federal common law does not provide a cause of action, and even if it did, the EPA has displaced it. Petitioners note how rare it is for courts to create federal common law and emphasize its particularly infrequent use to create causes of action. The United States does not take a position on whether federal common law provides a cause of action, arguing instead that the court rely on displacement and a long list of federal activities being undertaken to address global warming. Several justices pressed the acting SG about when precisely displacement occurs, asking what the effect would be on displacement if any of the enumerated actions didn't happen or were not imminent. The acting SG explained that displacement occurs so long as the nuisance is being addressed. This contrasts the state's position that federal action must be imminent and mirror the desired judicial relief. The SG explained there's no precedent that says the government must regulate the specific industry, the specific thing that the plaintiff isolates, in order for displacement to occur. The energy company's last argument is that the case presents non-justiciable political questions because there are no standards to govern the trial court's determination of what emissions are reasonable in light of myriad countervailing economic, scientific, and foreign policy considerations. The United States doesn't urge its use, but states that the court could properly rely on the doctrine to direct dismissal. The government's rhetoric, however, strongly supports the energy company's overall position, and Justice Kagan indicated that their standing and other arguments seem to fit more naturally under the political question doctrine. Across the bench, justices seem troubled by the fact-finding and policy balancing task plaintiffs would impose upon a district court judge. Justice Ginsburg noted that the relief sought would set up a district judge as a kind of super EPA, and Chief Justice Roberts observed that the whole problem of dealing with global warming is that there are costs and benefits on both sides, and that determining how to readjust the world economy is a pretty big burden for a district court judge. The states and private land trusts urge affirmance, framing the case as a routine common law tort suit, albeit on a larger and admittedly more complex scale. They argue that it comes within the court's precedent recognizing interstate pollution as a public nuisance, though Justice Kagan indicated those precedents dealt with more limited and localized pollution. The state's briefing and oral presentation seemed to sense the court's skepticism, and at several points welcomed remand, perhaps realizing that affirmance is unlikely. The plaintiffs may be content simply to live to fight another day, perhaps with an eye on gaining political advantage from this and the threat of additional global warming litigation, with which plaintiffs can extract concessions on legislation and regulation. So in this case, the court will offer guidance on the viability of global warming nuisance suits. The court will provide needed guidance on the effects and limitations of Massachusetts versus EPA and other core justiciability doctrines. Though justices across the bench voiced skepticism about the wisdom and propriety of this case being in federal court, it is hard to predict which justices might agree to reversal on any of the particular grounds raised. A reversal seems quite possible, so we could see multiple opinions offering different bases for decision. Some justices seemed comfortable that the states had established Article III standing, and instead they appeared focused on the political question doctrine. Others focused on whether this case fits within its precedent, recognizing a cause of action under common law for interstate pollution. And many wrestled with how a displacement analysis would impact this and future litigation. All told, none of the justices appeared comfortable allowing this novel public nuisance suit to proceed. The Supreme Court's 5-4 decision in Massachusetts versus EPA is an imperfect indicator, and with the recusal of Justice Sotomayor and the replacement of Justice Stevens by Justice Kagan, if the Massachusetts versus EPA alignment repeated here, the court would produce a 4-4 split, which would leave the Second Circuit's decision intact. No matter the outcome, the court or some portion thereof will clarify the meaning and limits of Massachusetts versus EPA and offer guidance on the limits of the judiciary's institutional and constitutional competence to craft and order remedies for harms allegedly caused by global warming. Because of the threat of future global warming litigation, such clarity will be welcomed by both the legal and the business communities. A decision in this case is expected by the end of the term.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.